Matt Williamson and Ryan McDowell.
Welcome to another edition of the Dynasty Blueprint. I'm your host, Ryan McDowell, joined as always by Matt Williamson. Matt, we're about a week away now. The draft is almost here.
Yeah, I'm pretty psyched. You know, I took a week off at the beach, recharged the batteries a little bit, but it's draft all the time for me now, and I'm loving it. I'm loving it, you know, for in all positions, but the dynasty aspects are really interesting too. And, you know, we have a great guest to focus on running backs. And it's interesting, you know, I mean, you and I have done this for a long time now, which is crazy. And many, you know, there was a lot of talk in the dynasty community, including us, saying this is going to be a historically great type of running back class. And I'm curious what our, you know, it seems like a little, the bloom is off that rose, but it's still certainly a above average class without question.
Yeah, for sure. I think that I was writing about this today, actually. I think the hype, well, I don't think, I know the hype was out of control on those, on that rookie class, on rookie picks, when you're acquiring 2017 picks over a year ago. And Matt, maybe you and I were part of that, feeding that hype and fueling that. But I still believe in this class. It was hurt, you know, it got hurt when Chubb went back, Washington went back, and Sutton went back, and Freeman. So those four, we all assume those four were going to be part of this class. They're not. Of course, some of the other players have kind of lost their shine a little bit. My guy Juju Smith being one of those, he's kind of falling down the ranks. So, but I'm still really impressed with the class overall. I think running back is super strong. Like you said, we'll see if our guest agrees. Tight end, I don't think it can be really argued that it's the best class we've seen in years. And quarterback is kind of down again. It's kind of blah, but we're never really excited about quarterbacks anyway, as far as rookies.
Yeah, I 100% agree. And I'm going to get to our guest in 1 second. But the one thing, you know, that always happens, and I think it's a lesson to dynasty owners, is, you know, if you remember, boy, Matt Leinart went back to school, he would have been the first overall pick. Well, yeah, maybe. But once these scouts and it becomes more public knowledge to us, really start to go behind the scenes on these guys, most of the stuff that comes out is bad. You're like, no one was talking about Dalvin Cook off the field or injuries or things, you know, whenever we were buying 17 first round picks for Dynasty.
Right.
You know, a couple weeks, months ago,
and,
you know.
And somebody made that point on a recent show or podcast I was listening to, and I can't recall who it was, but they were talking about the fall of Juju Smith-Schuster. What caused him to fall? And the answer, his point was, he didn't really fall. He was never necessarily a first rounder. You know, it was, he was just a name that everybody knew. He was a top recruit coming into college. As far as fantasy football, he was a top Devy guy based on his numbers and his performance, but he was never necessarily viewed as a first round NFL draft pick. So that kind of goes back to your point that once, especially NFL teams start digging in on these players, we always learn a little bit more.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, we mentioned our guest a couple of times. Let's get to him. We've got Graham Barfield here from Fantasy Guru. Graham is a running back guru. He has created a metric, I guess. I don't know if that's what you would call it, Graham, but yards created is kind of taking over at least the running back portion of fantasy football. How's it going?
Hey, I'm great. Thanks for having me on the show today, guys. Yeah, yards created is kind of morphed in this, I guess it's more of a process, this thing that I created last year, actually around this time with CJ ProSize. And basically, my yards created is kind of my attempt and my process at deciphering what happens after the running back's offensive line has or has not done its job. There's been a lot of, you know, good new advanced statistics that look into, you know, yards before and after contact, all of that great stuff. But there wasn't really one statistic that I found that really encapsulated what running backs actually do on a per attempt basis in terms of what they're actually accredited to doing. Offensive line play is obviously very important for running backs, but yards created is just kind of my attempt to not necessarily divorce running back play from offensive line play, but just to better understand the relationship between the two. And like you guys were kind of talking about, this is definitely a fun class. I'm with you a little bit, Ryan. I think the class has lost a little bit of its allure, but it is most definitely, I think, a step in a class above last year's group.
So Graham, I guess what first drew you to even dig deep into the running backs? What, you know, in this day and age of dynasty of fantasy football, it's really all about the wide receivers. And maybe that's changed a little bit after 2016 with some top running back performances, some disappointments at the wide receiver spot. But it just seems like for a couple of years there was a lot of running back hate going on. What pushed you towards digging into them and learning more about those performances?
Sure. Basically, I think we all have read or heard analysis that goes a little something like, oh, he was a product of his offensive line, or, oh, any running back could win in Dallas, or that offensive line was so bad, no one could have ran behind him. You know, we've heard that excuse me for Todd Gurley plenty of times already this offseason. And I basically just wanted to know and understand what the actual not necessarily differences, but understand a little bit better how a running back creates his yards and, you know, in certain types of schemes and certain types of elements. I chart yards created by inside and outside carries. I chart it by shotgun and under center carries. And now this year, I've actually, thanks to Matt Waldman kind of leading me down this path, he helped me kind of understand and better, I guess, bring to light defenders in the box. So that's a new statistic that I have this year, yards created by defenders in the box, that I think is actually probably the most powerful thing that I do now. So long-winded answer of saying, I just basically wanted to understand running backs better and help the community understand what running backs are actually, you know, above average at creating yards on their own.
Graham, can I interject one thing? I've heard a lot of people that do, you know, that talk about defenders in the box. And I think you're doing tremendous work. I'm excited as could be to talk about you for this hour. But I have a little bit of a pet peeve about it. And if you don't mind, can I kind of get it off my chest here?
Absolutely, man. It's your show. I mean, you get to talk. You get to do what you want, man. Go for it.
See, to me, defenders in the box doesn't matter. It does, of course. But if you come out in four wide and there's fewer defenders in the box, it is obviously a heck of a lot different than if you're in 22 personnel and there's, you know, six guys in the box. Now, I mean, don't you think that the best way to do that would be, what's the difference between heavy offensive personnel and heavy defensive personnel? Do like a plus one or a minus one system, as opposed to, boy, this guy ran against six guys in the box more than anyone in the nation. Well, maybe because they were always in four wide.
Sure. So
I think, what I mean? I'm not explaining that very well.
No, you absolutely are. I think I get what you're coming from. So let's look at two examples here. We can just dive right in, I guess. I think the best example maybe would be Christian McCaffrey, Stanford's offensive line. Not only were they one of the best schematically, one of the best teams in the nation, they also ran a bunch of unbalanced lines with two tackles to one side. They ran a bunch of multiple tight end sets and ran a ton from under center. That inherently boosted McCaffrey's, you know, defenders faced in the box. He actually faced eight or more defenders in the box around 63% of the time. If we look at someone like Joe Mixon and, you know, Oklahoma's offense, they ran a bunch of, you know, kind of counter tray out of shotgun. They ran a bunch of three wide, four wide receiver sets, not a lot of online of scrimmage tight end play. Mixon actually faced eight or more defenders in the box about less than 10% of the time. So right there, we have a pretty strong, I guess, dichotomy between the level, not necessarily just level of play, but just the defenders these guys actually faced. I think that inherently just kind of gives more value to understanding what defense is actually, what the running back was actually facing on defense, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that does. I mean, my suggestion or my thought, without obviously giving him half as much thought or one third as much thought as you did, was if I come out in a fullback, a running back, a tight end, and two wide receivers, and I see eight in the box, that should be plus one. You know what I mean? Like, they've made a decision against base personnel to try to stop my running game first and foremost. If they come out with seven, that's minus one, or, you know, whatever I mean. You know, and if a fullback would go off the field for a wide receiver and they still have seven in the box, well, they're still using the same tactic.
Yeah, totally agree. There's definitely some misnomers about defenders in the box. And again, it's not, it's definitely imperfect. And I'm still, I think as an NFL community, we're still refining the way we understand how offenses operate and how defenses operate. But yeah, it's definitely good points across the board. And again, hopefully something I continue to refine down the road.
Graham, you mentioned your process of finding this, of studying these running backs. What does that actually look like? Are you watching just tons of college games? What does that process look like to find this information?
Ryan, it's a mess. I mean, it's a bunch of Excel files and pivot tables, and it looks like I'm like creating Morse code basically in Excel half the time, which is a lot of fun. No, thanks to the guys at Draft Breakdown, there's a good amount of watchable film with pretty decent angles across the board for pretty much the in every class. The last two classes that I've studied, at least the top 15 backs, there's at least five games, and I always try to stick to five games. I try to take two good games, two bad games, and one sort of mediocre game for running backs. And usually at the top ends of the class for, you know, Dalvin Cook, Fournette, Zeke last year, there's at least, you know, 10 or 11 games. So I use specifically draftbreakdown.com.
So I guess you sort of just answered this, but, you know, the benefit I guess you have is, you know, their stats before you watch it, you know. So if Cook goes off for 300 yards, do you usually pick that game, or do you pick the game that he went for 43 yards against, you know, a tough defense?
Yeah, it just depends.
Or do you mix it up?
Yeah, I try and mix it up because I want to get a good blend of, you know, good games, high, you know, 200 plus yard games, and then games where guys have 25 carries and 80 yards. You know, I try to mix it up, and I don't want to be biased towards really strong games or really bad games for any one player.
One other suggestion. I'm sorry, I just keep doing this, but one thing we were taught as scouts was, if you're going to watch four games on a player, don't watch four in a row either. You know, like if he has a bad ankle and you get all a sample size of him fighting through injury, try to watch, you know, space him out throughout the year as much as possible.
Yeah, well, actually, I went back and recharted Leonard Fournette in 2015, 2016. I'm sure there's something we'll talk about, but there's a lot of really interesting differences and things that I kept seeing pop up, not only just on this tape, but in the data too.
Graham, let's talk a little bit about, I guess, the history of yards created. You mentioned this started last year. I think you said CJ ProSize was the first running back you studied. I know you looked at some of the others, Ezekiel Elliott, of course, and some of the other rookies from last year. What did this process teach you about those players, and what stood out about last year's rookie crop?
Well, first and foremost, I mean, Zeke was just a bad, bad man. I mean, we all kind of knew just going into it, his age adjusted production was pretty much in line with the best that we've ever seen, but his yards created data really backed it up too. He led every back in yards created per attempt on inside and outside carries. So was nice to see kind of just a little bit of confirmation about Zeke as a prospect last year. Derrick Henry too had some really interesting data points, but the one I found most fascinating, but he was actually second only to Zeke in yards created per attempt on outside carries. And we know he went to Tennessee, who is they use a lot of different outside schemes, you know, be it through zone. So it was interesting to kind of see that fit there. The far more interesting one to me besides Zeke and Henry is actually Jordan Howard. He was average pretty much across the board in all of the rushing metrics that I chart. Again, I should mention too, once again, that I did not chart defenders in the box in 2016. I just started it this year. But, you know, like I said, Howard was actually average compared to the 2016 class in yards created per attempt on inside and outside and out of shotgun, but was third in the class in pass per execution, and actually had some, even though he only caught like 1.5 balls per game in Indiana in his last year, had some interesting receiving metrics in his corner too. So yeah, Howard was probably my one really big miss last year, just because he didn't do one thing exceptionally well. He actually just did everything pretty well. And I think that was a miss on my part. And it was fascinating to see him go to Chicago, and pretty much from, you know, game one, game two, he, before Jeremy Langford got hurt, you know, it was pretty clear, I think, that he had usurped Langford. So Howard is probably the most interesting running back to me to talk about from last year's class.
I think one thing that's interesting about him too is that a lot of people don't give him credit for is I think he was actually a better receiver than Zeke was in their rookie year.
Yeah, that's interesting. I'd probably disagree with that just because I think Zeke was actually underused both at Ohio State and last year in Dallas.
Maybe that's a better way of putting it. Yeah.
I think Zeke was categorically misused as a receiver in Dallas last year. And Howard did show some chops, but he had a few games where I think he had some mental lapses with his hands. But yeah, Howard is a really, really interesting guy to kind of project this year because there's a lot of really good things that went in his favor, but there's a couple of things too that fantasy wise it's tough to repeat. And this is a whole nother, we're talking about a whole nother show here on Jordan Howard.
Well, you know what? I'm going to tell everybody about our friends at Loot Crate. If you are on a quest for epic gear, housewares, and collectibles, go to Loot Crate. They offer an epic range of pop culture items for less than $20 a month, and it's even cheaper when you use our promo code, which I'll tell you about in a minute. Whether you're shopping for the geek in your life, if you are that geek, Loot Crate is the best surprise you know is coming. Every month, there's a different theme and new exclusive items you can only get with Loot Crate. Treat yourself every month or give the gift of geeking out to a friend or a loved one, or just buy it for yourself. For April, join us as we salute some of our favorite mystery solvers with items from Stranger Things, Batman, The X-Files, Marvel's Jessica Jones. One lucky subscriber will also win a Mega Crate signed copies of Jessica Jones Alias Volumes 1 through 4. So here's what you do. You go to lootcrate.com with the / Dynasty Blueprint, enter the code Dynasty Blueprint, and you will save a couple bucks off what's already a cheap subscription today. So get on that. Loot Crate's been good to us.
All right, guys, so what we're going to do next is we are going to have a rookie mock draft, which you see a lot of this time of year, both on Twitter, on different podcasts, on different websites. We're going to try to do something a little bit different, though, since Graham is the running back expert, and since this is such a deep running back class anyway, we're going to have a running back only rookie mock draft. And Matt, this is going to be easy for you and I. We're going to make the picks. We're going to let Graham do the analysis, tell us some of the things he's learned about these rookies through his study. And Graham, since you're our guest, we're also going to give you the first overall pick. So running backs only, we'll do 12 picks, and we'll let you get started, Graham.
I feel honored. This is your show, and I get the number one pick. I mean, come on. That's like always, always everyone's a go-to thing. So this year is super interesting to me. And, I think there are four candidates at the top that are deserving of number one credit. But the guy I'm going to stick with, and this has been my guy since pretty much I started this year, and it's Dalvin Cook. He will be my number one running back, not only in this mock draft, but he's my number one running back pre-draft. I think, you know, obviously Cook is a 10th percentile spark athlete, and per Zach Whitman, over the last, I think, 18 to 20 years, no running back with that spark athletic profile has been selected in the first round. So obviously, I just want to get that out of the way. Obviously, the athleticism is a big red flag, but his yards created data was really second to none. Cook is actually second in the class in yards created per attempt for seven or fewer defenders, despite Florida State's offensive line being the worst in the class in terms of yards blocked per attempt. Florida State's offensive line was just a complete mess last year due to injuries, kind of shuffling along the trenches, just a bunch of different things. And Cook really excelled despite Florida State's shortcomings as a unit in the trenches. Cook was also first in the class in yards created per attempt out of shotgun and second in the class in yards created per attempt on outside carries. I will admit that Cook's three cone score definitely made my life a little bit harder because Cook's yards graded data was so fantastic. But he's also, you know, second in the class in terms of missed tackles per attempt, only to Joe Mixon. So I get that his kind of three cone and athletic testing scores definitely, I think, should certainly be made note of. But to me, his yards created data is still, you know, at a point where it's, like I said, second to none. And, you know, he's been producing at an elite rate for 3 years, starting as a freshman, rushing for over 1,000 yards as a freshman. So Cook, to me, I'm not really overthinking it. And I still think he's my number one guy. But there are certainly four willing and capable backs in this class worthy of being number one.
And that's one thing we also want to talk about as we go through this, just where we see some drops from one tier to the next. And I don't think we need much analysis. Everybody recognizes those top four running backs are the top tier. Once we get deeper into our mock, we'll talk about where we see some other differences, though. All right, Matt, Cook is off the board. You get the second pick. Who are you taking?
Well, one thing I just wanted to mention that I think is awesome of what Graham is doing here is he can actually tell us things like this offensive line was really bad. Like, you would just assume Florida State can recruit anybody. They should have a better offensive line than, you know, half of BYU's or half of what these guys are running behind. But if that's not the case, that's really, really valuable knowledge. So kudos there. That's awesome. But you're screwing me up because Cook would not have been my first or second pick. I'm very torn between Forsett and Mixon, and I thought you would make that decision for me. I'm going to go Forsett just because I think his landing's – yeah, what am I talking about? I wrote down Forsett. I don't want Justin Forsett. I'll take Leonard Fournette. I don't think he gets past the Panthers. I think he very much – I think he's going to end up in Jacksonville, to be very honest. So I think there's a better chance he has an immediate playing time, better landing spot than Mixon, a little safer, probably a few more touchdowns in his career. But I'm really torn between those two. I'll take Fournette.
Ultimately, I think the difference between why I don't have Mixon at number one, and of course we'll talk about Mixon when we get there, but the reason I don't have Mixon at number one is because of the draft capital. I think it's fair to say we have no idea where Mixon is going to go. I think anywhere after the second round is probably the sweet spot. But yeah, Leonard Fournette, I totally get it having him number one. I went back, like I mentioned earlier, I went back and charted both of his 2015 and 2016 seasons. It's been very well documented that Fournette struggled with an ankle injury in 2016. I actually found there was virtually no difference in Fournette's yards created per attempt figures in 2015 and 2016. However, the big difference came in missed tackles, and that should be no surprise. Fournette actually forced 46% more missed tackles in 2015 versus 2016. Fournette actually also improved his pass pro execution rate by 7%, and he gained two more receiving yards per route run in 2016 over his 2015 season. So he improved both as a pass blocker and as a receiver in his final year at LSU. And, you know, kind of as what we expected, he forced more missed tackles with two operating ankles. The big thing that I have in Fournette, and one of the things I've written about extensively over at fantasyguru.com, is Fournette struggles out of shotgun. Fournette ran out of shotgun on about 22% of his attempts over the last two, in 2015, 2016, so the last 2 years. And he averaged an abysmal 3.50 yards created per attempt out of shotgun. Over the past 2 years, no running back other than Fournette and Jamal Williams has averaged fewer than 4.0 yards created per attempt out of shotgun. You know, again, that might be a bit of a small sample. It's about 50 carries that I ended up charting of Fournette out of shotgun. But I can comfortably say that Fournette is uncomfortable running out of shotgun.
I would hope that whoever takes Fournette, especially if it's Jacksonville, says this is your offense. You know, we're building things around you. We use a top five pick on you. This going through Blake isn't cutting it. I would hope that they don't try to do the square peg round hole thing with him, but who knows? Maybe they will.
Yeah, that's one of the things that I found really interesting about people mocking Fournette to the New York Giants. And I don't know if Fournette's going to get eventually the Giants, but the Giants are primarily a base 11 personnel team. Like, they run three wide receivers about 95% of the times. And Fournette, I think, could certainly improve. There's any way that Fournette, let's put it this way, Fournette is not a lost prospect as it goes out of shotgun. Once he gets to the NFL and gets behind an NFL offensive line with an NFL quarterback and some good coaching, I think Fournette could certainly improve as a shotgun runner. But at least coming out of LSU, it is a definite concern that the other top three running backs in this class do not have.
All right, I'm up next with the third pick, and Graham, you already mentioned the four deep top tier, so that makes this still a bit of a tough call. For me, I'm going with Christian McCaffrey at the third pick, and it comes down to kind of what you mentioned, Graham, draft capital. McCaffrey seems to be, according to all reports, locked in as the top 15 pick, maybe even higher. I've seen Carolina at the eighth pick mocked quite a bit lately. I don't know if I would love that fit specifically, but he's certainly a prospect on the rise, according to what we have access to. So, Graham, talk about your thoughts and your findings on Christian McCaffrey.
Well, frankly, I think McCaffrey would probably be my other choice at 101 if I really had to pick. I think in a way it's kind of splitting hairs at the top. I think McCaffrey is probably the most fun running back in this class to watch. His data is just excellent too compared to the class. He actually bested both Dalvin Cook and Leonard Fournette in yards created per attempt on inside carries, which kind of surprised me given Christian McCaffrey's frame. He's definitely a little bit smaller than both Cook and Fournette. I know, Matt, we talked a little bit before the, you know, here at the introduction about, you know, eight or more defenders in the box and the value of defenders in the box. But McCaffrey bested both Cook and Fournette in yards created per attempt versus eight or more defenders. I think I mentioned earlier McCaffrey faced 63%, or excuse me, faced eight or more defenders on 63%. Of his carries. A lot of that, again, kind of has to do with the personnel that Stanford ran out on the field. But McCaffrey, just based on those two metrics right there, clearly shows that he is at least in the conversation, if not better than Cook and Fournette, at running inside and first stack boxes. I think we've got to talk, too, about McCaffrey's elusiveness just as a player. I mean, not only does he have a 98th percentile three-cone score, 60.3% of McCaffrey's cumulative missed tackles that I charted came via elusiveness. And I chart missed tackles in three different categories, and elusiveness being, you know, either a juke spin or cut in space or in close quarters. You know, McCaffrey's the real deal. And I don't really get the people that are biased against him, maybe because of his slider frame, but yeah, McCaffrey's just a fun player, great running back to watch. And I'm really interested to see where he goes next week.
Yeah, I'm actually doing a rookie mock draft for DLF right now, and I ended up with the second pick. Corey Davis went first, so I had my choice of any running back, and I try to update my rookie rankings pretty often. I think I still have Fournette first and Cook second, I believe. But as I really was trying to decide who to go with on that pick, I ended up taking McCaffrey. So I think I'm with you, Graham, that he is – I think he might be my top running back overall, but these four guys are so close. They all have so many things to like about them and to be excited about as far as NFL prospects. So I don't want to say you can't go wrong, but it's a good time to have a top four or five rookie pick.
Ryan, if McCaffrey happened to land in Indianapolis, do you think he could be the consensus 1-1?
I really hesitate to say anybody's going to be consensus 1-1 just because of that same thing. There's so many, there's just so many options. So, but in Indianapolis with that mid first, I think that would be pretty close. You know, if the Raiders took a running back in the late first, that would challenge that, I would think. But other than that, I think any of these running backs in Indianapolis with that mid first rounder would have to be that. I'd rather have that than Fournette in Jacksonville or, you know, Fournette in Carolina even.
Matt, I take it that you like McCaffrey and Indy too, because I mentioned like 2 months ago, if there was one thing I wanted out of the NFL draft this year, if I get one wish, I wanted McCaffrey in Indianapolis. So I take it you like that fit too?
I do. I also like Philly right before that. I don't like the Carolina fit at all. You keep hearing that. I think they need a power back. I mean, a downhill banger. What I keep thinking about with the Colts, and eventually to a lesser degree, because I am such a Wentz fan, is Luck coming to the line of scrimmage, motioning McCaffrey out in the dome, you know, getting him on a linebacker, audibling at the line of scrimmage, moving him all over, letting Luck just orchestrate an offense with a weapon like that would be pretty enticing.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you mentioned, I mean, McCaffrey was split out wide on about 30% of his routes that I charted. So, yeah, definitely a fun, dynamic player. I can't wait to see where he goes. Yeah, I bet if he goes to Indy, I think he'd be my 101.
Graham, you're back up with the fourth pick, and I think it's probably an easy pick. Who are you taking here?
Yeah, it has to be Joe Mixon. I've written extensively, too, about Mixon's off-field issues and the issues I have with him as a human. I will stick with what I know, and what I know on the field is an excellent running back. Frankly, on talent alone, I think Mixon is the number one running back in this class. But again, I have to mention too, we don't know what type of capital a team is going to invest in Mixon in a week from now. The data, though, is just unbelievable. I mean, Mixon is first in the class in yards created per attempt, both inside carries and versus seven or fewer defenders in the box. He's second to Dalvin Cook in yards created per attempt out of shotgun. Mixon is first in receiving yards gained per route. He's first in receiving yards per game in 2016. And just by the way, over the past year, 2 years, Mixon leads all rushers in percentage of carries to create 5, 10, and 20-plus yards. Again, I mentioned it with Matt at the top when we were talking about defenders in the box. OU does primarily almost always run out of shotgun. They put P. Ryan under center a few times, but primarily they ran out of shotgun, which lends itself to Mixon facing 8 or more defenders in the box fewer than 10% of the time, which was well below class average. But that is just a small data point that I think just it doesn't necessarily encapsulate just how dominant Mixon was in 2016. So he is my pick at 104. I just have no idea where he's going to go. And, you know, regardless of whatever team takes him, the optics are going to be bad. It'll be interesting to see where he goes for sure.
Yeah, no question. I think that's a steal. You know, I mean, like I said, I was torn. If I had the one pick, I might have taken Mixon. I mean, I think he could be a total stud. But I'm on the clock here at 5, and you guys both need to check your email. On the trading block, you just got an email from me at 1.05. I'm trying to get out of this pick. I have no idea who to take. I don't know what to do. I'm kind of torn between P. Ryan and Kamara. I'm going to go with Kamara because I think he catches passes, probably ends up as a second-round pick. But he's a little soft. I'm not big on him.
Right. Kamara is probably one of him and Deontay Foreman are the two running backs I've had a difficult time cracking, and probably the two running backs I'm going to be, at least for fantasy purposes, are going to be the most landing spot dependent players, at least in the top 6 or 7 backs in this class. At Tennessee, obviously, there's kind of a very limited sample of plays that we have. He only had about 200 career carries at Tennessee. And inside of those carries, I think there's a very limited usable plays because Tennessee ran a ton of power out of shotgun. Kamara didn't face very many stack boxes, and they did a lot of different things to get him in space. Kamara is second in the class in yards created per attempt on inside carries alone. But I need to mention here that just 55% of Kamara's carries actually went in between the tackles, which is infinitely below average over the past 2 years. Kamara's a great receiver. There's no doubt about it. Among the 14 running backs in the class, only McCaffrey accounted for a higher percentage of his team's receiving yards in 2016 than Kamara. But again, I think it's really hard to get a read on Kamara as a runner because he was used in such an exclusive, limited role at Tennessee. I don't know if he's a feature back in the NFL, but we've seen these you know, kind of satellite backs like James White and Tevin Coleman become not necessarily consistent fantasy producers, but at least usable fantasy producers with a ceiling. And I think Kamara could kind of be like that.
Yeah, Matt, I'm with you as far as who to take here. I would have taken Kamara in your spot. This is really just kind of a pick 'em. Who might be your favorite at this point? It is a prime spot to trade down. It's also a prime spot to that will really be dictated by what happens in the NFL draft. If one of these guys, Kamara, Foreman, P. Ryan, there's a couple of others that are possibilities. If those guys end up as early, mid, second round NFL draft picks, then they have to be valued in this range. I'm going to take one of those. I guess I'm going to go with Samaje P. Ryan. I don't love it. He's not going to really catch the ball very much. I don't know. I don't feel good about that pick. Graham, what do you think?
Yeah, you should feel a little better. I'm okay. A Samaje Perine fan. I need to be a little more vocal about how much I actually liked Perine, because I haven't been. He was above average in both yards created per attempt on both inside and outside carries. I think maybe the one thing that is holding you back is Piron's not very sexy as a runner. He's second in the class, or excuse me, second from last in the class in missed tackles forced per attempt. And I think Mixon, Joe Mixon, his ex-teammate, is kind of outshined or outshadowed maybe Piron's not only just yards created data, but him as a prospect. But Piron was a slightly below average in yards created per attempt for seven or fewer defenders in the box, while Mixon just smashed. And like you mentioned, you know, Piron too is a little bit limited as a receiver, but I actually found that he is well above average in terms of pass pro execution. It's a bit of a small sample. I think I only charted 8 pass pro attempts in his yards created sample, but he was above average there. So I think there is at least a chance he can contribute on third downs as a pass blocker and maybe catch a few more balls than expected. But yeah, I'm definitely a Piron fan.
So Graham, going back to Kamara, do you view Kamara as closer to that top tier or closer to the Piron, Foreman, et cetera group?
Well, if you would have asked me about 3 months ago, I probably would have said he's closer to the latter. But after his combine, and he posted some exceptional burst scores, that's lower half explosion, so vertical broad jumps. I think Kamara's, you know, his lower half explosiveness is in a, you know, definitely a top tier of his own. He's just one of those backs, Ryan, that's really, really tough to crack for me. Because his sample was so limited and, you know, there just weren't that many usable plays. Let's put it this way. If he ends up going in the top 50 in the upcoming NFL draft, I think there's a decent chance he could be, you know, fifth or sixth. There'd be more merit, I think, after the draft if he goes in the top 50 to have him at RB5 or RB6.
See, I keep thinking about him as a Colt in the second round. You know, yeah. Or even the Eagles, you know, some of the, whoever misses, if you miss out on McCaffrey,
yeah, he's the maybe
you take him in the second round.
He's the consolation.
Right. Those are good landing spots, yeah. Too. I'm curious, would both of you, if you had 1-5, would you have both taken Kamara?
Yes.
I don't know. I probably wouldn't have. But then again, like I go back to like, who the hell would I have taken in his place? right. You know, there kind of is, it's like you can make an argument for literally 4 guys there. I think Kamara is certainly in the running. I probably would have probably ended up taking Kareem Hunt, and I think I'd probably be out on an island on that one. But yeah.
Sounds like you're taking him at 1-7.
I was going to say, Graham, you're actually up with the 1-7 pick.
You're so on the clock.
Yeah. Just go ahead and jump into that.
I got to stick with my dudes, guys. I got to stick with my guys. Kareem Hunt was one of my guys from the beginning, and I was kind of went into a depression state after his really poor combine. He's a 28th percentile athlete, and he ran a 4.6 40, and at his weight, that is way, way below average, and was really disappointing. But he is, you know, just in the same vein as McCaffrey. He's one of the most fun running backs in the class. He's actually third in the class in yards created per attempt on inside carries, but you know, I need to clarify that by saying he only saw 8 or more defenders 5% of the time at Toledo. He did it all of this in spite of Toledo's poor offensive line too. Toledo was second from last in the class in terms of yards blocked per attempt behind, ahead of only Florida State. And Hunt, is fourth in the class in missed tackles forced per attempt, despite an 11th percentile 3-cone score that really kind of catapulted him a little bit. I think down a lot of draft boards, but yeah, everything about Hunt's data kind of screams he's an underrated running back. But you know, he'll be just kind of in that same vein as to a lesser extent as Kamara and Foreman and Piron. He'll be really landing spot dependent in that if he does end up going in that third or fourth round, I think you could keep him in that second tier with Kamara, Foreman, and Piron. But if he ends up going as a 5th-6th round pick and really has to fight for any sort of playing time, he'll unfortunately have to fall down my board as well.
Graham, I've been saying his name a lot around here in Pittsburgh as a target for late third round as Bell's backup, maybe replacement, who knows. You think Steeler fans would be happy with that, huh?
Man, Hunt's fun. I know the athleticism isn't there for him, yeah, at least on paper, but his data and his tape is just, he's just electric to watch. I mean, I know there's a lot of talk about, you know, level of competition, and Toledo definitely did not play any power programs. But I mean, Kareem Hunt was just running laps around these dudes. I mean, like, when we talk about players from lower levels of competition, this is what you want to see. You want to see dominant production. You want to see dominant tape, running just laps around these lesser athletes. And that's what Hunt was. It would have definitely helped if you were a better athlete, but his yards created data is really fantastic.
All right, Matt, you're up with the 1.08 pick. And, you know, I just love that we can even do this exercise. I don't think most years you could not go 12 deep with relevant running backs, rookie running backs. But here we are. We're 8 deep, and we've still got some good options on the board.
Commissioner McDowell, is Curtis Samuel a running back?
We're going to base our answer on what MFL says, and he's a wide receiver. So, sorry.
Okay. And I'm curious, Graham, did you watch him or did you count him as a wide receiver?
Well, I watched him, but I didn't chart him because I think he would have skewed a lot of the different things that I do because just the sample was so small. Yeah. But yeah, he's a fun player, man.
Yeah, I don't know that I would take him there, but I was just curious if he counted or not. I guess I'll take Foreman. I'm sure a lot of our listeners are like, why didn't you take Foreman earlier? He's big. He's fast. I think he might be Brandon Jacobs, though.
Hey, Brandon Jacobs isn't a bad thing. I think Deontay Foreman has just unbelievable elite straight line speed. It's as evidenced by a 94th percentile weight adjusted speed score. That's weight adjusted 40 time. But I mentioned earlier with Kamar, I've really struggled with Foreman. He's tied for third in the class in yards created per attempt, but he saw seven or fewer defenders in the box on about 83% of his carries at Texas, which is well above average. Another thing I've been trotting out when talking about Foreman too is Texas's offensive pace was just like, I mean, they ran just a ton of plays last year. They were actually fourth in adjusted pace. And that kind of boosted Foreman's, not only just his carry total, but his rushing yardage total. He obviously, ran for over 2,000 yards, which is really sexy. But I think a lot of that had to do with Texas's offensive pace and the fact that Texas primarily ran out of shotgun. Another thing I've really struggled with Foreman too is I think he dealt with a hand injury last year, but we don't necessarily know the extent of the hand injury. He only saw 0.8 targets per game, which was by far the last in the class. And Foreman, too, was also well below average in pass per execution rate. So I have a hard time figuring out where Foreman can contribute on passing and third downs immediately in the NFL. But there's no doubt about it. I mean, his straight line speed when you adjust for weight and in his yards created data is really strong. But there's also, a few red flags, at least in my eye, that I kind of can't get past. And, another thing I'm hoping to get clarified in the draft next week.
So, Graham, you do the protection charting, right?
I do.
Or did you get that from somebody else? See, that's awesome. No, I didn't realize you did that. I mean, to me, that's a great tiebreaker. If you're between two or three backs here, the guy that can't protect isn't going to see the field in all his rookie year. You know, I mean, obviously that has huge dynasty implications.
Sure, yeah. I should mention, I'll clarify it now. I chart pass protection just simply by pressure. I don't chart it by sacks allowed or anything like that. I only chart it by pressure. And if guys basically keep the pocket clean, I'm very liberal with that. If they keep the pocket clean and show at least a willingness to block, I will chart it as a executed pass pro attempt. I know Pro Football Focus does it a little bit differently, and I've seen some interesting things that they've published on Foreman about being a good pass protector. But in my data, Foreman is below average in that metric.
Is there anyone that is in this discussion that's great or awful? I mean, just really, really extreme.
Not in this class, actually. I think everyone, you would know, Matt. I mean, you've been watching these guys way longer. You've been watching running backs way longer than I have. But, you know, I think to a certain extent, outside of Ezekiel Elliott last year, everyone kind of has a ways to go as a pass protector, and definitely some things that they need to improve on. But at least in this class, I don't think there's one guy that's really, really great like Zeke last year or really, really poor.
Ryan, I guess you're on the clock.
Yeah, I'm up with the 9th pick. There are two guys I like quite a bit in this range, and I'm mostly interested to see if Graham takes the other one. I'm going to go with Jeremy McNichols from Boise State. I saw some people really like him. I've seen some people rank him as even their fifth running back for fantasy purposes. I'm not quite that high on him, but there are some things I like. Graham, what did you see with him?
Yeah, McNichols would have been my pick. Good. So you sniped me there, Brian. Look, there's definitely some things that McNichols needs to improve on. In terms of yards created per attempt on inside carries, McNichols was, you know, pretty well below average, and he was closer to average, which is good to see, in yards created per attempt on outside carries. But the big thing that I actually wanted to talk about here was not necessarily just his rushing acumen, but his acumen as a receiver and as a pass protector. I think this would probably surprise some people, but McNichols is actually first in the class in pass pro execution rate, which not only will it surprise people, it surprised me too. I did not expect McNichols to be such a prolific pass protector. And he was used at an elite rate at Boise State as a receiver. McNichols ran nearly 13 routes per game in his 5-game yards created sample. And Dalvin Cook and Joe Williams were actually second in the class in terms of routes per game at 9.6 routes and 9.2 routes, respectively. So McNichols was used as an elite rate as a receiver, can immediately contribute on passing downs as a pass protector. So in McNichols' case, I think we kind of have to work backwards. I think McNichols is a great receiver and, you know, can protect the quarterback, but just the things that he needs to work on as a runner is definitely his inside acumen. He kind of at times failed to see where gaps were opening up. He failed to, I think, use his feet and eyes in conjunction, which, you know, Dalvin Cook and Leonard Fournette and Zeke all have done exclusively. McNichols certainly has work to do as an inside runner, but there are major, major positives for him, you know, immediately contributing on passing and third downs.
My impressions of him are he seems to be average or above average in just about everything, but not a superstar or a liability anywhere. Do you think that's sort of safe to say?
Yeah, that's the perfect way of saying it. I think a lot of those guys, excuse me, kind of fall under the radar every year. McNichols, you know, maybe no different.
All right, Graham, back to you. This is going to be your last pick. It's the 10th running back pick overall. I still see some names I like on the board. Who are you going with?
Yeah, it's going to be James Conner for me. Not only is
I was going to take my pick guy.
I had to do it, man. I'm sorry. Not only obviously is his story incredible, you know, coming off knee injury and cancer in 2015. There's quite a bit to like too in his yards created data. I think this will probably surprise some people, but Conner actually was first in the class in terms of yards created per attempt on outside carries. This comes in the face of the fact that Conner faced the most defenders in the box on average in the class. Conner faced 8.2 defenders in the box in his yards created sample. McCaffrey was second at 8.1. Conner definitely has some work to do as a receiver, but there are certainly, you know, a couple of data points that I like. You know, not only just to mention the you know, yards created per attempt on outside carries, but, you know, I think he certainly has some work to do as a receiver but and a pass protector. But I kind of like his upside. I was kind of hoping he'd go to New England as kind of the new blunt back, as it were. But Bill's intent on making all of this stuff confusing for us. So I like Conner quite a bit. He's kind of the perfect, you know, back half pick, you know, top, you know, not top 10, but kind of on that cusp of 9-8, you know, 9-10-11 that I like to take.
Yeah. I was going to mention the Patriots, and people around here hate that idea, but boy, he would be a Patriot back through and through. Yeah. Another note on Conner, just because I watched Pitt way more than anybody else, was I thought he finished the season way stronger than he began it, which, you know, would make some sense considering the treatment stuff he was dealing with, but it didn't hold him back. He was getting better and better as the season went on.
Yeah, unfortunately, I just based on what I have available, I got to watch, I think, 3 games from 2014 and 2 games from 2016. I wish there was more tape out there so I could, you know, kind of do a more in-depth study of his last 2 full seasons. But But yeah, Connor, just in terms of his production in 2014 and his weight and his weight adjusted speed, he looks a lot like Carlos Hyde to me, which is, you know, pretty interesting, especially if we can get a comparison like that in, you know, the 9th, 10th, 11th pick of our little draft here. It just kind of goes to show how many interesting talents there are in the class.
Yeah, there are. And I guess I'm on the clock here at 11. I'm looking at Gallman. I'm looking at Williams from BYU. I know a lot of people like Joe Williams. I know Waldman's big on Hill. I think I'll take Williams from BYU. I mean, he seems kind of a monotone, one-speed guy, but gets the most out of what he has. And, I mean, he's not super exciting.
Yeah, monotone is the best way to describe Jamal Williams. That's perfect. yeah, he's actually last in the class in yards created per attempt versus seven or fewer defenders, but isn't due in large part to BYU's subpar offensive line. Williams actually created just slightly, ever so slightly, fewer yards per attempt in shotgun than Fournette. I think Williams showed a willingness to pass protect, but he was below average in pass per execution rate and last in the class in receiving yards gained per route. I'll be interested to see if Williams, it goes before the fifth round. But, you know, I think a team will see at least that he showed willingness in all three facets of a running back's game. And I'll be interested to see where he goes to.
Would you take him over Gallman?
No, I would take Gallman, but Gallman again, I just can't really, I think Gallman is the type of player who could immediately come to an NFL team and contribute, but you wouldn't necessarily want him carrying the rock, 15 times, except for maybe one or two spot starts. Like, you know what you're getting out of Gallman, but I have trouble seeing his upside as a runner.
So guys, before I finish this off with the final pick in the draft, let's look back at these past seven picks. We had Kamara and Graham, you kind of already said you view him pretty much in a tier of his own. So the six players we've taken since then, Perine, Hunt, Foreman, McNichols, Connor, and now Jamal Williams. Are those guys all in one tier? Do we see some separation there when we're talking dynasty value or even their future NFL prospects? Graham, what do you think on that?
I think Perine and Hunt are probably in a class of their own. I think for different reasons, though. I think Hunt can contribute as a receiver. I don't necessarily know if he's got the athleticism, at least on paper, to be a hammer three down back, but I think Hunt's definitely underrated. Perine can, like I mentioned, pass protect and is a pretty strong inside and outside zone runner. So those are the two guys that I would have kind of near that tier as with Kamara, if not, over Kamara in a sense.
All right. So last pick here, I still think there's some good options. We've already talked about the depth. You mentioned Gallman. There's Elijah McGuire. Some people like Brian Hill, Aaron Jones is kind of intriguing. I think I'm going to make my final pick. Just Graham, I want to hear your thoughts on this guy, Marlon Mack.
Oh, Brian, I know exactly what you're doing here, man. Look, I get it with Marlon Mack. He's certainly an above average athlete. USF split him out at receiver around 40% of the time, but he is by far the most frustrating running back that I've watched over the last couple of years. Not only is he frustrating just on a per play basis, he's extremely variable. About 67% of Mack's carries in his yards created sample, Mack was extremely variable on a per play basis. In fact, almost half of Mack's total yards created came on five runs, and over one third of Mack's inside zone carries created fewer than 2 yards. So I get that Mack has some definite allure as a receiver. At least as a runner, I have a hard time making sense of kind of where he stands. In spite of kind of extremely variable yards created data, Mack saw just 6.35 defenders in the box on average, which was last in the class. So not only was he extremely variable as a runner, just on a per play basis, he kind of doesn't really have an excuse for being that way, in spite of not facing a ton of defensive pressure. So I get Mac has some upside as a receiver, but at least as a rusher on first and second downs, I would have a hard time immediately trusting him carrying the ball.
The people that seem to like him mentioned Tevin Coleman.
Yeah, but here's the thing. I think if you like a back of Mac's archetype, he's basically Alvin Kamara, but he does everything worse than Alvin Kamara, if that makes sense. Like, if you like Alvin Kamara, that's fine. And I like Alvin Kamara. He's a fine player. But he does – Marlon Mack does pretty much everything worse than Kamara, not only in my data, but just from, like, a subjective film standpoint. I mean, he's just – he'll pop. He'll have one really great play, and then he'll have these three plays successively that just leave you scratching your head. Yeah, I'll be interested to see what team kind of bites the bullet on Mac, and I'm sure they would have some sort of defined role for him like Kamara, but I kind of don't see it, at least initially, with Mac.
Graham, was there anybody we did not draft in this exercise that you think is maybe dynasty relevant? Anybody that we should be aware of?
Sure, yeah. Aaron Jones is super interesting. I could not chart him because I only had two games. It was a chart, and unfortunately, that's just kind of too small for me. But he had really strong rushing market share numbers. About, I think he had 84% of UTEP's rushing market share last year in his final year, which is just elite for any college standards, in spite of any competition. Aaron Jones is definitely a name I would be watching. He has agility as well. I think Joe Williams is an undervalued runner, but he has a lot of work to do as a receiver and pass protector. He is probably, I think, at least coming out, he is the most work to do as a receiver and pass protector. I don't usually care about drops too much, but he dropped three of his seven targets in a five-game sample. And he had the third fewest 2016 team share of receiving yards. He only had 5% of his team's receiving yards in 2016. So I think Jones and Williams probably would round out that 13 and 14 spot for me. Then Wayne Gallman, I think I mentioned earlier, he is one of those guys that an NFL team will probably really like to contribute, but ideally you just wouldn't want him carrying the load on a down-by-down basis. I think this is a fun exercise, and it kind of really shows outside of the top four, I think this class kind of loses its allure a little bit, but the top four is really strong. And then there's like literally seven to eight guys that you could rank in any sort of order, depending on where they go in the draft.
Yeah. Again, I think the depth of this class is really what's going to carry it. So not only does it have the top heavy stars in those first four picks, but plenty of options. You know, some of those guys will hit. Some of those guys are going to end up being fantasy starters. And hopefully we're lucky enough to find a few of those in the second and third and even fourth round of dynasty rookie drafts. Graham, thanks so much for joining us today. Before we wrap up, just tell our listeners where they can find your work.
Sure. You can find me on the Twitter machine at Graham Barfield, and you can read my yards created breakdown at fantasyguru.com. I have it as a pinned tweet. It's in my Twitter bio. You can go and check out all of my work over there at fantasyguru.com. Thanks so much for having me on the show today, guys. It was a great discussion. Interesting format here to do the mock draft. I actually really like that. It was a cool way to break it up.
That was a blast, man. Thanks for coming on. And for the people that don't know, I've been a big fan of Fantasy Guru for a very long time. They do great work, and you're a great addition to their staff as well.
Yeah, thank you so much, Matt. Yeah, I'm having a great time with John and all the guys.
All right, and that'll do it. We'll be back next week with more Dynasty Blueprint.